Welcome back to Open Source Startup Podcast. This is Tim from Essence VC. And as usual, our lovely co-host, Robbie from Cowboy Ventures. We're super excited to have Quentin from MeleeSearch. MeleeSearch is building an intuitive search experience in a snap. So welcome, Quentin.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me here.
We are super, super excited to have you on. And the thing that we love to do on this podcast is go all the way back to the beginning. So take us back to 2019, I believe, and where the idea for MeleeSearch came from.
In fact, I think we go a little bit earlier because the idea came at the beginning when we were working in a very big French e-commerce website called VP. And we were on a kind of R&D lab inside this big enterprise. And we had all the issue coming from different departments internally. And one of their biggest issue at that time was a search. They had a terrible search. When you were looking for a red dress, you had wine and not real dresses. So it was a huge topic for them. So we just addressed it like everyone in an R&D lab looking over the competition, what are the existing solutions. And we quickly find that you had only two real solutions. The first one was Elasticsearch, but it was already the search solution that was used in this company. And it was very not relevant at all. It was super complex to maintain, hard to configure, a nightmare for everyone. And on the opposite, the only viable alternative solution was Algolia. But we had the need in this enterprise to self-host everything, every databases, etc. So it was a no-go. And also the pricing model was just insane already. So it was like just from the direction, a no-go for this solution. So what we did is just that we take a look over the research paper, the documentation of the different search engine, and we started to recreate from scratch our own search engine. It was the very, very beginning. So it was not what MeleeSearch is today, of course. It was use case specific only for this company. But at some point, while working on it, we just think about why a company like VP need to build their own search engine. It should have something missing on the market, something between Elasticsearch with the open sourceness of Elasticsearch, with the possibility of configuration of Elasticsearch, but with the feeling of Algolia, this snap and super relevant search results. So we were amazed to see that we are using application on our phone, on internet. All the applications we're using, Slack, Notion, Facebook at the time, Twitter, have kind of terrible search experience. And every time we were looking over a new application, we found that the search experience was not so good. And with what we were trying to build, it would be better. And at some point, we were also thinking that Algolia have a good search engine, is super fast, super relevant, but in fact, no one have it. Most of the applications are not using it. Why? And most of them are using Elasticsearch, Solr, or Lucene because it's open source, because it's allowed to create their own use case on top of it. So we decided to leave VP to create our own company based on the knowledge we acquired by doing this proof of concept of search at VP and to do a new kind of search engine with already the idea to put it as an open source project. We were very, very lucky because only 2 weeks after we left this e-commerce company, we were into a hackathon in our school, the 42 school in Paris. And Louis Vuitton were doing a hackathon on the search experience. So they wanted to have several groups of people. There were groups from Algolia, groups from Elasticsearch and us, basically, it was only the three solutions, working on different applications to try to demonstrate how we could improve the search experience into a specific application that needed. And we won the hackathon, the first place, only 2 weeks after the creation of the company. And it was awesome because at the beginning, it was the price was only a bag, a written bag. But at the end, we won much more than this because we won a contract with Louis Vuitton for pushing in production what we have shown during the hackathon. So we had 9 months to build the entire search engine as open source and push it in production at Louis Vuitton. And today, Louis Vuitton is still using it. It's serving a use case for in-shop salesperson. And every salesperson at Rubiton have an iPhone in their pocket with Mail Search on it. It allows them to find every product, every stories about the product, pictures, everything regarding all the things that exist at Rubiton. And that was the beginning of a journey, but not the beginning of the journey everyone knows, because this was only in 2019. At the end of this contract with Louis Vuitton, we were thinking about what should we do? Should we continue to look after big brands like Louis Vuitton, or should we create a startup, normal startup? And what kind of startup should we put our code source as close and have a normal way of doing code, etc.? Or should we continue to deep dive more on open source? And very quickly, the answer was, of course, we should continue to do open source. And so that's why I think it was in December 2019, we officially announced on all the networks that MailSearch was open source. And since this date, the growth on the GitHub stars was just insane. We had a Hacker News post posted in December, or perhaps it's in early January, where we were comparing MailSearch to Elasticsearch for user-facing search. And we had so many people coming to us and telling us, like, they were so happy about a new search solution that was a real competitor to Elasticsearch, faster and more relevant out of the box, easier. And that was also backed by a company, because you were plenty of open source project, open source search engine, but that was only created by one person. It was just a proof of concept, etc. And it was for the first time a real project backed by a company and an open source one. So it created a lot of momentum. And in a way, the momentum never disappeared, because we continue to have an insane growth on the community, on the GitHub stars, of course, and also on the usage back then.
There's a lot of story points there that are all worth diving into for sure. It's super cool, because I always ask this question on a podcast, because a lot of times you hear that I'm going to build an open source alternative. And actually, in this case, Elastic is open source, actually, right? But you're actually much faster, right? There's some differentiation factors that you're inserting in. But I felt like it's not always that obvious when you just pick another open source, or maybe even closed source, slower incumbent, and just say, I'm going to have an open source alternative that's faster, and you get instant popularity. It always sounds like you get instant popularity, because the way you even describe it is like, well, we just put it up at Hacker News and voila, you know, things happen. It actually doesn't always happen. So I wonder, like, what do you think was some of the key elements that made it actually more like an overnight success? Not saying how your insights come about, but maybe the way you talk to the community, or the way you announce the project, or maybe the way you expressed the differentiation, or the, like, what was the approach when it comes to actually talking about it that allow you to actually have your community be so excited? Because I'm sure not the only open source alternative for Elastic. There are actually quite a few in the past, but like I said, maybe it's a company, or maybe there's a way to describe it. What was the details that you think actually made it a huge popular search?
Spotting only one detail would be hard, quite challenging. I would say there is a bunch of things. First, search is something that are on every product. Every SaaS application, every mobile application, every e-commerce website have a search bar. That's the first point. So it just everyone know what it is and what it could be used for. And secondly, Elasticsearch is technology used by not every developers, but a lot of developers, and everyone know that it's very difficult to configure, to maintain. So it's a pain. Using Elasticsearch is a pain for everyone. So having a new solution that is easier is a relief for every developers. And the last thing I think that allowed us to have some momentum was also the fact that we were building it in Rust. And having the Rust community behind us, it was just at the beginning of the hyper growth of Rust, just at the same time, all the Google, Microsoft, etc. were talking about Rust too. So a lot of developers were really seeing the benefits of coding in Rust and what it could bring, the performances, the security, and all the stuff that comes with Rust. So it was a little bit hyped. And I think it helped us.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Also, just I think unlike how a lot of open source companies start, there was a really clear, like, big market here. There was a big incumbent and room to build a better product. I'd love to talk through where you started, because Mealy Search is talked about for being much faster, global, being able to get up and running with much faster. Did you start with all of those value props? Because I imagine, like, speed, that one's probably really hard to solve for everyone, depending on where they're located in the world. And so, like, the very first version of Mealy Search, like, what were the key parts of that open source project that you really wanted to have as part of it?
Yeah, we always had in mind that Mealy Search should be built on 3 pillars. That is the developer experience, the speed of search, and the relevancy out of the box. And we were very lucky because we were able to work on Mealy Search a year before being public and having all the hype. So it was not as mature as it is today, but we already experienced with a big customers like Louis Vuitton how it will work to scale a solution like this and how it will work to ask developers to integrate the solution into the application. So we always had those 3 key pillars, but during a long time, we had a big trade-off that was the indexation speed. So we were very slow at adding new documents. It's something we have improved every year since, and something we will continue to improve, but we had to keep this trade-off to be able to have all the others. And from the beginning, we had this sub 50 millisecond search response. We had, since the beginning, the same relevancy as Algolia. And since the beginning, we were even easier than all the solutions and even Algolia in terms of developer experience.
Yeah, so I think it will be interesting to also talk about how you thought about the thought process to really start the journey of going after incumbents. Because like you mentioned, Algolia and Elastic was like the 2 names you basically from very first blog post talk about. There's only 2 things. There is a service. We need a better way. And I think open source, it kind of keyed it. And so like you can able to hold onto your data, right? You can have like a very easy way to have your data privacy and performance. But obviously building a database is not like, you know, a 3 to 6 months journey, right? This is basically going to take you years. In multiple years, sometimes even a decade to even get to like, I don't even know what a perfect product is, but yeah, it's a very long, intensive process. And often you have to have really clear trade-offs to begin with. Like, what do you actually focus on? And what do you actually spend your time and energy on? And it seems like you mentioned in your very first few blog posts that enterprise features, you know that SLA is needed, there's all these features, but you consciously pick community and accessibility, like widgets and different ways to actually use as much as you can very quickly. So let me talk about like, how did you make those trade-offs and what are the things you thought was the most important to start when it starts the Mealy Search? I'm sure lots of people say, I need skill, right? I need this and that. Right? And that takes so much time to work on. So what are the ways you thought about to build and grow the community and how you thought was the right choice to begin with?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It takes time to build a database and even more when you are building everything from scratch in a different language because there is not a lot of database that are built in Rust. And at the time, we were perhaps the first one. And well, yeah, we built almost everything from scratch. I would say that first, I think we just follow our actual users. And actual users were individual developers that wanted to use something different, something easier, having less data, perhaps to index, that were doing demos over the blog. Yeah, I think first we focus on the people that naturally discovered Mealy Search. And we not directly focused on enterprise use cases, neither as e-commerce use cases. For example, we always try to do small step in the e-commerce ecosystem because we know that there is a huge piece that is Algolia on this ecosystem. They are really, really good. They have tons of features. They have a lot of value for those companies that are even more than just search, things needed for merchandising, for example. And for us, it was, we could not build a robust and fast search engine and be also at the same time the best merchandising tool. It's not possible. So let's just focus on our core engine and let's try to make it the more robust, the fastest, and the more relevant, and iterate quickly but surely by adding features on top of it. There is a lot of features that we take a lot of time to develop. There is also some others that is a pretty nice story, but I think since the first day, people ask for a replicated system with high availability, etc. And we just say, no, it takes too much time to do it. Well, we saw a lot of companies trying to do it, but having a lot of issue. And we were like, we have so much to do on other topics to bring enough value to customers before doing this for bigger enterprises. And also because we are in Rust and we are Triviton since 5 years now, and it never crashed. So we were like, okay, perhaps high availability should not be a priority for now because we are pretty confident about our solution. And we were quite transparent with users about the fact that we don't have high availability, but it works very well. And in fact, when we created our cloud, we just feel that, okay, in fact, we don't necessarily need to have these geo-replicated things to have high availability, enough high availability for customers. Today, we have very good SLAs without having very complex stuff, just by having a good combination of new technologies like Kubernetes, shared storage, etc. It allows us to take a shortcut on those kind of decisions. So I think it was a lot of product decision and trying to find as much shortcut we were able to take. And if there were some use cases we were not able to handle, company due to their size, okay, not a big deal. We will have them in 5 years. At the end, they will choose MediaCert because we will just be better than all the other ones.
It's super interesting. I also want to spend a little bit of time talking about your vision for like what a search product can become, because starting out, you saw room for a much better version of search products that already existed, faster, higher availability, global, open source. But I imagine like search 5 years from now, especially with a lot of AI powered applications, like it will look different. And also for any open source based company, you get so much feedback from the community on what they want you to build. But a lot of that ends up being things like enterprise readiness and or things that competitors have. So how do you think about like the future for MeliSearch and a product roadmap that's both informed by the community, but not just like solely driven by all of the kind of one-off features that they want that might not be super differentiating long-term?
So first, to answer to your question, we have evolved a lot recently with the arrival of the cloud, also on how we prioritize features we want to have. And now we are much more about following the revenue because it's important, and following the use cases that will drive MediaSearch for the next several years. And in fact, it's awesome also for the community because most of the things that enterprise need is also asked by the community. It's just for us a way to prioritize the more efficient way for enterprises. And indeed, search has evolved a lot since 5 years. And if we take a look back 5 years ago, why we created MediaSearch? We created MediaSearch to let every application or website to have an amazing search experience without having to spend all the energy, all the teams into maintaining or configuring a solution. That was the idea. And I think with the new technologies like AI, LLM, all that stuff, it will just help us to go way further on this. So until now, we don't have any features regarding AI. We don't have what we call vector stores or semantic search or every search. But the good news will come soon because it's a big step for MediaSearch and we are actively working on it. And I really think that it will drastically change the DOM and the ecosystem for search because we will be the first one to have a full package with no configuration at all, hybrid search with vector storage and everything packaged under one binary that are able to scale and to just handle all use cases.
So maybe I want to talk about like your first adopted users that are willing to use you in production. Because oftentimes databases, it's like you're scared to actually trust this. I think search is probably less critical potentially depending on where you put it and how you adopt it. Maybe there is like a short circuit or there's like ways to like hide it if somehow there's an error, but it is a very user visible feature at least. So it has to work, right? It represents a lot of your brand. How did you find your first production users, and what was the things you did to allow them to trust you? Because I think that is one of the hardest part when it comes to like building a database company from day one, is they are, I guess, trusting the team, but often requires a lot of back and forth of figuring out what are the parameters, what are things we need to try and test, right? So maybe talk about some of the things you learned in that early days of getting actual production people, and what are the things you learned in that time?
I already mentioned about Revident. That was our first production application, but I will keep it on the side because it was quite specific. Indeed, search is centric to a lot of businesses. It's the core of e-commerce website, but it's also very useful features for example, SaaS application, what we call app search category. But what is cool is that thanks to our open source application, everyone that come to MySearch today, MySearch Cloud today, already tried MySearch open source. So they already have a sense about how it works, how stable it is. They probably have already been in production several months with MySearch open source, but they don't want to keep it on their own self-hosted server because they don't want to do the updates, for example, and we are releasing new measure improvement every 2 months. So they just don't want to manage this on their own, and they trust us to scale. And I think also we have this pattern where some company are using MySearch in a new product they would like to launch that have a less impact on the main product or on, for example, the documentation or the knowledge base or something that have a lower impact. And they test it on it. And after a few months, they are convinced that it works. And when the idea to improve the search experience on the main app is put on the table, they're just like, okay, we are already using MySearch and it works perfectly fine. So why not keeping using it and just putting all our data sets on it and using it also for our main application? That's, I think, a pattern we detect, and that works pretty fine. Thanks to open source, and also thanks to the fact that we are not the primary data stores. We are not a MySQL or MongoDB. People don't have necessarily to rely on us to keep their data. If at some point you have a data loss with MySearch, you always have your data somewhere else. So it removes a little bit of friction also. But I think it's all the points that make people open to put it in production very quickly.
Yeah, I think that highlights one of the major benefits of being open, and you can just develop trust, especially with bigger companies earlier on, and not have these super long cycles of them getting to know you and compliance before they've even touched the product. So I think it's a really valuable point. I wanted to talk a bit about the team that you've built, and you've been very thoughtful about the culture that you've built, very open about a lot of the team's values. But I, in particular, want to talk about the early team. So especially since you, like, Melee Search really took off quickly, I imagine that there was a lot of like, okay, we're growing like crazy, like who to hire, like who to bring in early, especially the non-engineers. Like, when did you start thinking about bringing in like technical writers, product folks? And like, do you have any kind of companies you looked at where you're like, okay, I want to build a team early on similar to them, or just kind of like frameworks or things that you thought about when it came to team building?
I think in the early history of MySearch, the first thing we did was hiring people we already knew and we were very happy to work with. And the two first employees are still at MySearch today. And it's awesome. They have followed the entire company. And I think they also created, in a way, the heart of what is MySearch today. It was not a choice at all, but the two first hire was women. Was too female. So it changed a lot of things about how we perceive the recruitment and also about how candidates perceive MySearch. Because when you have more women in a team, it's also help others to identify themselves to the company. And that's why today we are not 50-50, but almost. And we are pretty happy about this because it's something hard, but it's something we really enjoy and we want to continue to push forward. And I think it's, you know, it's only small decision you took at some point, not necessarily thinking about the future and what the company will look like in few years, but just decision you took with your heart, and that creates the spirit of the company 5 years after or 10 years after.
I just want to applaud you for doing that, because we talk to a lot of, I mean, everybody we have on here, fairly technical founders and companies. And I would say that more often than not, when founders, especially if they themselves aren't female or diverse, that often isn't a priority until later on in the company. So I just think it's incredible that you thought about that early. The second part of my question was, who were the first non-technical hires, like folks on the business or product or go-to-market side that you hired? And how did you think about what profile they should be?
I think the first non-technical people we hired was our ex-HR, now head of people. It was, if I'm correct, the fifth employee. And I think it says a lot on who we are. Hiring HR at this stage, when we had only five people, she created the backbone of the company by creating the values, setting up all the hiring process, and she just helped us to create the entire company, people-wise. And I think it was the best thing for us, because first, it allowed us to focus also on where we were the best and not necessarily hiring. And it was also something we already knew from the past. She hired us in the previous company we were in. So it was like someone we were already confident to work with, we already knew. So it was pretty easy. Yeah, I think it was, she was the first one. And then we probably hire, I don't remember if it's a technical writer, a dev advocate, that was the second one, non-developer profile, probably, yeah. Because at some point, everyone was doing developer relations, but we really needed to have someone dedicated to this. And we were also at this stage growing a little bit the team, and we had the need to create a dedicated team for the engine, the search engine, and also one for the integration. That is a big part of MySearch today. MySearch is easy to use because we have a lot of integration, more than 40 maintained by our team. So we had to dedicate a lot of developer on it. They were still doing a lot of contributors help and dealing with the community, but we needed to have someone that would handle all the questions, doing demos, doing articles and other stuff.
Yeah, it's super awesome to hear that you focus on that pretty early days. So I want to maybe ask about some of the choices when it comes to maybe supporting your customers and users, because I think as an open source project, not everybody usually have the same products. And I think you have a very conscious choice, because I look at your latest sort of like customer success stories. There's some that uses your cloud product, but some actually choose to self-host a Docker image and you support that too, right? So you're actually giving users the choice to either run it themselves completely on their own and you just provide support, or run it as a managed, or I'm sure you probably just can just use it without your support as well. Like, how do you pick and choose? I guess, what's the thought process to support all of them? Because we definitely see more companies just support like a managed cloud. Anything you do on your own, we don't try to like help or have other support plans on that, because it definitely seems more difficult to do that. But what was the choice that you made that you also want to support like all three in some level, right? The community for a free tier and actually have a dedicated enterprise support for self-hosted and a cloud. And what are the ways you think this is very beneficial for you long-term too?
I think it's come from our mission to allow everyone to have a good search experience. And we really want to stick to this. That's why we did open source, and we really want to keep this. We just don't want to sell stuff. We want to help also companies. And we have another case study about Bookshop. That is a big book e-commerce shop competing against Amazon. And one of the things is, thanks to MySearch, we can fight against Amazon on the search. And it's amazing. And that's the kind of thing we want to do. Allow everyone to have this kind of experience. Because at Amazon, there should be, 100,000 people working around search. It's amazing to know that a company like Bookshop can handle the same kind of search experience with only one person that have worked on it and with MySearch technology. So I don't say that it will not change in the future, that we will continue to push forward as much open source users or people that want to self-host it. But still, if they are self-hosting it, they have their own reason. And right now, we are not able to capture this value because we don't have support for people that want to self-host it. We don't have a different license for specific features we can sell to them. We have nothing like this, but we still want to keep the link between us and the people that are self-hosting it, because I'm sure that most of them in the long term will just want to switch to the cloud version because it's just easier to manage. It's more scalable. They will have extra features like analytics, like geo-replication and stuff like this. At some point, it's our job to bring into the product enough value to make them switch. And if they are still using the self-hosting solution, we should keep the channel open to know why they're keeping the self-hosted solution and what can we do to help them or to get value from them also.
I want to spend a little bit of time talking about your paid product. So you have a lot of users who have probably either been used to or seen or used Elastic and or Agolia's paid product and just like their format. How much did you look at how they were charging when you were trying to figure out how you would charge and or like what were the different things that you tried and thought about when you were coming up with the right paid model for your cloud product?
I'm definitely sure we don't have the perfect pricing model. It's something we are evolving, that will evolve with time, and we will announce in a few weeks a revamp of our pricing model. So it's not the best time, I think, to say that we are confident about the pricing we are charging, but it's normal. The pricing will change with also the value we are able to provide in our cloud. Right now, I want to say that, yeah, we are charging less. Most of the companies that are coming from Algolia, it's obvious because most of them that are coming to MySearch are use cases that doesn't fit at all with Algolia. Today, Algolia is mostly a discovery tool for e-commerce websites. Why MySearch is mostly a search engine for any kind of use cases. So if you take the example of an app search, so I would take an extreme example like Notion. Notion will never be able to use Algolia because they have way too much document and it will cost, I don't know, 10 million per month, something like this. Of course, they will have discount extra, but it's just that the tool, Algolia, is not made for this amount of documents. So it makes sense because MySearch is to have a different approach over the pricing. So that's why today, if you just compare one-to-one MySearch and Algolia, we are cheaper in the pricing, but also we want to bring in the future extra features, extra value that will allow us to just deliver more value to customers and to charge more in the features. And if you take a look over Elasticsearch, their main use case today is not user facing search, is mostly log analysis, BI, and stuff like this. So they also have a different way to charge. And they do not charge with the number of get requests or post requests like we are doing. They are mostly just charging for the size of the machine, like some others are doing. But we choose to go over a full usage, not full, but because we have packages, but choose to go over a usage-based pricing because if you go into the head of our customers, what makes sense for them? They have a SQL database, they have a Mongo database. The only thing they know are the number of documents they have, the number of items they want to search in, and the number of search queries they will have, because the search queries, for example, for e-commerce, are directly related to the revenue. So it's something they will follow and something they are able to pay for. So it makes sense to create also your pricing based on how your users see your product and the value of your product.
Got it. And so it's been a really amazing journey since you started around 19 to all the way now, and you know, raised multiple rounds of funding. You really has made your name in the search space. And I think definitely we also see, like I said, alternatives are continuing to crop up more. I'm wondering, like, what is the usual transition point? Because we talked about the early days, you just pushing for community, pushing for adoption, right? Now we had to think about pricing, and think about enterprise users, and now we have to think about all these kind of other things as well. What has your role changed, I guess, in terms of your own role since early days? I'm sure it's really just a building the product, trying to make sure things work. But have you started transition to like building the teams, right? And you know, think about how to stay competitive in this environment. What are some of the learnings you have personally growing from that into more running a little larger team and running a different phase of your company? What's like the hardest things you have to learn, I guess, and some of the learnings you have to transition there?
I think the main thing I've learned is that we can't be prepared for what happened in 6 months. Our role evolves every 3 to 6 months, and we have new things to deal with always and different things. So at first, I was a developer. I was developing the engine. So I was just coding Rust. I was really enjoying it. And I think it's also what I like, building something. So at first, I was building the materials of the engine. Then I took a step back and I was more the product manager of the product. And I was more like choosing how to build it and what to build. And right now, I'm more like on the business side. I'm doing more sales. And I'm more like doing, okay, what to build to generate revenue and to deliver way more value to customers. And I think I have iterated over the different steps without being conscious about doing it. It was pretty smooth, but you have to know that at some point, someone will tell you that please stop to code on the main code base because you are just making people losing time. So, okay, I'm stop doing it and I will just do what I'm the best at. That is the next step. And then you move forward. And it's super important to know when you have to leave a specific domain, even if you loved it, to go somewhere where you will also bring more value to your company. And at the end, what I've learned is that the only thing I love is to build the company and everything around the company. So whatever the job I have to do for making it live, I enjoy it so much. And I was very lucky because one of my co-founders, Thomas, took, I would say, most of the company building, most of the people stuff, organization, hiring, etc. And I think we really competed ourselves on this. I was more on the product side. It was more on the people side. And we tried both. We had to change several times of position. And at some point, I think it was complicated to know who is doing what. And it was confusing for the teams. So we had several times needed to just clarify, okay, what do you love, what you don't want to do, what you are good at, and okay, what you will do for the next 2 months and what I will do for the next 2 months, what are our scopes, and just work together because we have, of course, a lot of overlapping and we are sharing a lot of stuff. So we are always discussing about all topics, but we have our own area of responsibilities, I would say, and it works well like this.
Yeah, I love the growth trajectory of the different hats you had to wear along the way. And I'm sure that I'll even keep adopting as you get to scale too and have to become almost like the head of people in a way where you have to be like the top exec recruiter. The thing we wanted to end on is there are so many nuggets in here for other open source founders to learn from, but any kind of pieces of advice that you wish or you would give someone who is much earlier stage than you, like for like the 2018, 2019 era, like what are the kind of biggest learnings from super early on?
The first thing that comes to my mind is about being able to have a sense of who your open source users are. And it's still an issue today for MySearch because we choose to not track the user's email. So today we have a lot of engine on the ledger that are used in production. And sometimes we learn that a company in the NASDAQ are using it since 2 years and they are super about it, but we never heard about them earlier because we don't know who is using today MySearch open source. And we have some telemetry, but not knowing who are the ones that are using it in production, it's a kind of a miss, a big miss for now. It's something we want to solve in the coming month, but it's super hard to solve. It would be way more easier if we had added a tracker somewhere before with the consent of the user, of course, but there is some smart way to do. I had someone that told me that a good and smart way to do it is just by telling people that if they want to have security patches or security updates by mail, they just can leave their email somewhere and they agree to receive also some other communication and it will not be so often. So we did not did it. And today it's a miss.
Awesome. There are so many nuggets in here. Thank you so much for doing this with us, Quentin. This was an awesome episode.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.